Welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host this week, Tom Wheeler, Executive Director of the Environmental Protection Information Center, or EPIC. And I should give a shout out at the beginning to our sponsor, Humboldt Distillery, who makes great organic liquors here in Humboldt County, all down in Sunny Fortuna. So go to your local grocer and pick up a bottle of Humboldt Distillery. You won't regret it. And thank you so much for sponsoring the Eco News Report. So on today's episode, I am joined by my friends from the Friends of the Eel River, Alicia and Scott. Hey, gang.
Hey, Tom.
Hey, Tom.
So we get to celebrate a bit on today's show because Friends of the Eel has a victory over the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. And we're going to be saying FERC a lot in this show, FERC, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. I'll try to de-acronym ourselves a couple of times throughout today's show, but it is one that is full of acronyms. So there are two dams on the Upper Eel River. We've talked about the effort by Friends of the Eel River and others to get these dams out and to restore miles, hundreds of miles of habitat upriver that has been cut off from these dams. But just to recap for folks who forget, because I forget about this, let's go over these dams.
Well, I like to start when I'm telling people about the project with the lower dam, actually, because that's the way that the fish come to it. So imagine you're a fish, you've made it 150 miles up the main stem of the Eel, you come to Cape Horn Dam. This is the lower of the two dams. It has fish passage, but it's really, really not great fish passage. Let's put it that way. And that's what we're going to be talking about today, mostly. But say you make it through that, then 12 miles upstream from there, you come to Scott Dam. And that's the one that has no passage whatsoever. It's a complete barrier. It creates the reservoir Lake Pillsbury. And behind Scott Dam are 280 miles of prime steelhead spawning habitat that steelhead have been unable to access for a little over 100 years. So collectively, this project is called the Potter Valley Project, which hopefully all of our listeners are very familiar with by now.
And we have some movement towards some sort of a dam removal solution for Scott Dam. Can you give a brief update on what that is?
Yeah, so FERC, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, issue hydropower licenses that last for 30 to 50 years. So about once in a lifetime, we have an opportunity to remove these dams during the relicensing process. So that's what we're going through right now with the Potter Valley Project. Really, when the process started back in 2017, PG&E, who owns this project, decided they were going to relicense the project. So they set about doing that. And then through a series of, frankly, really unprecedented developments, they tried to auction the project. They tried to sell the project. They ultimately ended up withdrawing their notice of intent to relicense, declared bankruptcy. All this was against the backdrop of their mounting liabilities for deadly wildfires in the state. Just a whole host of big problems for PG&E. So when that process started in 2017, Congressman Huffman convened an ad hoc stakeholders group made up of a really broad range of entities that are interested in this relicensing process. This includes folks on the Eel River side who have a lot of stake in fisheries improvement, as well as folks on the Russian River side where water is diverted to through the project. Congressman Huffman's group has been meeting for several years, and eventually when PG&E pulled their notice of intent to relicense, that was, like I said, after they had started thinking they were going to relicense, decided not to, a subset of entities from this stakeholders group came together to issue their own notice of intent to relicense, and they're called Two Basin Partnership.
And I believe the Two Basin Partnership, to be even more confusing, is now made up of five partners. Is that right?
Yeah. So Sonoma County Water Agency, now known as Sonoma Water, the Mendocino County Inland Water and Power Commission, and those two entities kind of represent water interests on the Russian River side. And then there's Round Valley Indian Tribes, Humboldt County, and California Trout. And those are the five partners that make up this entity that is trying to relicense the project. And so as part of this relicensing effort, in May of 2019, these five partners submitted a project description along with this relicensing process. And in this project description, they outlined a process for removing Scott Dam. So the new project is going to be sans Scott Dam, which is wonderful. We're very excited about that. But it really fails to deal with the project of Cape Horn Dam. And that's what we want to talk about today.
Performing that it is a de facto fish passage barrier.
Yeah, it's true that the fish ladder at Cape Horn, usually referred to as the Van Arsdale ladder because it goes into the Van Arsdale Reservoir behind Cape Horn Dam, it often performs very badly. At times of high flows, the ladder actually can become completely clogged with debris. So that, yeah, it does become a complete barrier to fish passage for a little while.
So while it is great that the Scott Dam is looking like it will be removed, and this is a fantastic outcome of this two-basin partnership, we still have issues at Cape Horn and fish passage through the Cape Horn Dam.
Right. And I should say there's two core values that this two-basin solution is based on. So Congressman Huffman's group, when we convened this entire time, gosh, it's been 4 years now that we've been working with that group. We've been working off of these two core goals. The first goal is to essentially restore volitional fish passage past the project locations where the dams are now. It's important to note that this goal describes not volitional fish passage, but passage sufficient to support recovery of naturally reproducing, self-sustaining, and harvestable native anadromous fish. So what this means is this is actually a higher standard than volitional passage. And that's really a key thing that we like to hold on to. The second goal is to, while obtaining this fish passage, minimize or avoid adverse impacts to water supply reliability, fisheries, water quality, and recreation in both watersheds. So this essentially means that what we're trying to do is restore fish passage, but maintain the diversion so that folks who rely on the water on the other side aren't going to lose out on it. And so that kind of outlines why, when we're looking at changing this project, it's really important that it's wonderful that Scott Dam is going to come down and we'll have fish passage there. But if the fish still can't get past that first dam that they come to at Cape Horn Dam, if the flows are really high and the ladder gets clogged with debris and closed down, that's not volitional fish passage. And it's certainly not fish passage sufficient to sustain a naturally reproducing, self-sustaining, harvestable fishery, right?
So, Scott, let's walk through what are the problems at this Cape Horn Dam and the Van Arsdale fish ladder.
Let's start with the construction of the dam in 1908. They built what was then and remains the longest and highest fish ladder in California. It didn't work great, so they started fixing it, changing it, renovating it. They did that in 1917 and several times further until 1987. Another round of changes were built into the fish ladder to provide attractive flows, basically better flows at the base of the ladder so that fish would find the ladder and get up it. At that point, the improvements basically allowed Chinook, the big fall salmon in the Eel River, to get up the ladder in about half the 12-hour time it had previously taken them. But there's still a lot of big problems that we've seen in the decades since. Alicia's already noted one of them, that after high flows, the ladder gets full of rocks, sediment, and debris to the point where nothing can get up or down the ladder. And in fact, the fish hotel that was built to provide those attractive flows gets completely full of this immovable bed load. And to reopen the fish ladder, PG&E has to close down the ladder, get in a team of divers, and clear it all out. So we wrote to FERC, the Federal Energy Commission, in March of 2019, pointing out these problems, pointing out that PG&E had closed the fish ladder twice during salmon and steelhead migration that year and had closed it several times in the years previous. What that means is that the fish that need to get up and over the ladder, which are listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act, weren't getting up and over the ladder. And that means that the Endangered Species Act was being broken, that PG&E and FERC were allowing fish to die that needed to survive to keep those fisheries going, to keep those populations going. So under the Endangered Species Act, if a federal agency does something that may affect a listed species, the federal agency is required to immediately consult with federal biologists who understand that species. That would be the Fish and Wildlife Service for a terrestrial species. But because we're talking about fish that go to the ocean and come back, anadromous fish, it's the National Marine Fisheries Service. FERC never consulted with the National Marine Fisheries Service on any of this stuff. Instead, what FERC did was tell PG&E to put doors onto the fish ladder. So that's what they've done. They built a set of shiny new doors that cover the openings on the fish hotel. That will prevent the rocks from getting in and filling up the fish hotel, right? Perfect solution. Except, can fish get up the ladder with the doors closed? No, they cannot. Okay. So if a federal agency takes an action that may affect a listed species, the Endangered Species Act says you have to consult with the National Marine Fisheries Service here. And again, we know that FERC did not do that because they don't have in the records of their decision here the determination that this won't affect a listed species and the concurrence from NIMS that says, yep, you're right, won't affect them, no problem.
So you've alerted the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission to their violations.
Right.
What did they say back to you?
They ignored us. They completely ignored us, and they issued a set of orders, first for the construction of the doors, construction and installation of the doors, and then for a plan to operate the doors. And they went on at some length about how they had consulted with the Round Valley Tribe and the California Department of Fish and Wildlife and National Marine Fisheries Service. But what they meant by that was that they had talked to those agencies, not that they had asked NIMS, what will be the effects of this action on listed species? And just to get into a little bit of detail here, when NIMS looks at these kinds of questions, or the federal biologists working under the ESA look at these kind of questions, they have a range of possible responses from, yes, it may affect, to, holy cow, this is going to lead to possible jeopardy for this listed population. And the last time that the National Marine Fisheries Service looked at the operations of the Potter Valley Project at the last relicensing in the early 1980s, NIMS concluded that the operation of the project jeopardized salmon and steelhead in the Eel River. And they said, you got to change the flow schedule and put some flows back in the eel. But they never looked at the fish ladder. They never gave them a permit to kill fish. Which means at this point, we're looking at not just FERC violating the Endangered Species Act by failing to consult with NIMS, but we're also looking at PG&E violating the Endangered Species Act by killing fish without a permit, which they appear to be doing routinely.
So we have two potential violations of the ESA, just to recap. So one is directed towards the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. And you assert that FERC has this ongoing responsibility to consult on projects that it authorizes when those projects impact endangered species, and particularly when they are recommending things, changes to those projects that will further impact endangered species. And then the second is that PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric, who operates the Cape Horn Dam, by maintaining this fish passage in such a way that fish become routinely blocked because of debris flows within the fish passage, that itself is a violation of the ESA's, the Endangered Species Act's, take prohibition. Take meaning they are harming the species by impairing an essential behavioral life category or whatever it's called. They're impairing the migration and reproduction of those fish. They can't get above the dam. So you're really causing serious damage and harm to these fish, right?
Exactly. And another thing we haven't mentioned is that when you block fish passing up the fish ladder at Van Arsdale, you're leaving them exposed to a much higher risk of predation, especially from otters, which have discovered that the fish ladder is a wonderful feeding station.
So you're doing double damage there. All right. So
exactly. So the background here is important to note. We are talking about, in the case of steelhead, population that's maybe a couple hundred fish in a given year. So in a week's migration, you might have a dozen steelhead coming up the ladder. You block that for a couple of weeks and you've taken out 10% of the population, maybe more. That's a really important blow. We're not just talking about a fish here or there in a population of thousands. We're talking about critical damage to a critically imperiled run of fish.
You're listening to the Econews Report. On today's episode, I am joined by my friends from the Friends of the Eel River, Alicia and Scott. Friends of the Eel has a victory over the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. So you alerted them in March 2019, and I believe you've had a follow-up since then. So after you alerted them, FERC ignored you. So you've pinged right. them again. Can you tell me what you did most recently?
Yeah, we did two things. One, we filed a set of papers with FERC that said, can we come in and argue about this? That's a motion to intervene. And the second one was a petition for rehearing that said, you got this badly wrong. Your decision ignored the law. And we showed them why and how in great detail. The second thing we did was file an additional notice at the end of the period in which FERC had to consider our petition and motion. That was a 60-day notice of our intent to sue. We filed that with FERC, with PG&E, and with the National Marine Fisheries Service.
So, Scott, why do you have to file this notice of intent to sue? Why aren't you just in federal court right now?
Under the citizen suit provisions of most of our environmental laws, we have to give the agencies and the people who may have hurt endangered species a chance to fix what they've done wrong, a chance to cure their violations. So by giving them 2 months at a minimum to do something about the problem, the idea is that we'll actually advance the cause of endangered species protection without necessarily having to tie up the courts in lawsuits. So we give them a good warning. If they can fix it, great. Then we don't have to bring a lawsuit. And lo and behold, the day after we filed our 60-day notice here, we got the most remarkable document from FERC, an order withdrawing their previous order. And it has this lovely sentence in it. Commission staff has determined that we are required to consult with NMPS under the Endangered Species Act to ensure implementation of the plan is not likely to jeopardize the continued existence of any endangered or threatened species.
Funny how they appear to have determined that all on their own.
Yeah, it's there's nothing like the threat of a lawsuit you're going to get thumped on to make you reconsider the reality you're looking at.
Yeah.
So let's break down what this means. So FERC says that they have to consult.
And we haven't really given the background here. FERC has vigorously resisted any efforts over the past 5 to 7 decades to hold it accountable under any laws other than the Federal Power Act. It has especially resisted the Endangered Species Act and refused to ever consult outside of its licensing and relicensing process. So this is a fairly important change.
Yeah, and Scott, you don't just mean the Eel River, you mean on all of FERC projects, right? So we're talking about Columbia River dams, we're talking about all sorts of fish passage issues, and probably other projects that don't involve dams that also involve endangered species.
This is especially about dams. On the Plumas River in the Central Valley of California, NMPS formally petitioned FERC 7 times to begin consultation on potential effects of their actions on endangered species. FERC ignored them. This is a big deal. It's a small thing, but it's a big deal.
Yeah. So why do you think this change is happening now?
Well, as I suggested, it may simply be that FERC staff saw a lawsuit they were likely to lose and so backed off because this order sets no precedent. It's just an order. So they don't lose the lawsuit that would then change the rules. The other possibility that I think is not terribly likely, but maybe, is that FERC has a new chair who has made some noise about changing the culture of the commission. And it is possible that we gave him an opportunity to push things in the right direction.
Well, and speaking about changing the culture of the commission, if this whole process sounds really complicated to you all listening, It is. It is very complicated. And one thing that FERC is doing right now, which is quite interesting, is embarking on developing standards for their new Office of Public Participation. This is something that I recently learned was established by the legislature in, I think, 1978, but was never funded until just recently. So just this last year, Congress said to FERC, hey, why don't you go about actually establishing this Office of Public Participation? So right now, FERC is soliciting input from a variety of stakeholders. Notably, they are not going out of their way to seek input from environmental stakeholders, but they have had listening sessions for the general public, for tribal representatives. So they're, you know, they're doing a little bit. But right now, there is an opportunity to make your voice heard and tell FERC how they can make it easier on you to engage in this process in the future. So pretty soon on Friends of the Eels website, you're going to see an action alert with some unfortunately slightly complicated instructions for how to submit comments and basically how to submit comments on how to make this process not so complicated in the future. It's a pretty curious move to see from an agency like FERC that has always kind of shielded itself from public input by being so complicated and having such ridiculous procedures.
All right. So go to the Friends of the Eel River's website, which is Alicia.
Eelriver.org. Eelriver.org.
So let's get back to a quick discussion of how this could impact the dam removal process and how new consultation could impact the fish ladder and fish passage for Cape Horn. So for Scott Dam, does this new FERC consultation requirement, does that slow down or in any way impede dam removal?
The question at this point is not whether Scott Dam will come out or not, but what path is going to lead us to dam removal most quickly and most certainly. And really, we have two roads before us right now, and we don't know which one is ultimately going to be the road we're on. One is the relicensing path that Alicia described, where the Two Basin Partnership is seeking a new license. And that project that they've described is removing Scott Dam, but retaining the diversion, moving it from a summer diversion to a winter diversion, but maintaining a diversion from the Eel to the Russian. And as we said, that deal was based on an understanding that we would provide not just good, but great fish passage at both dam sites. The problem right now is that the project proposal that the Two Basin Partners have submitted to FERC and had approved by FERC doesn't deal with Cape Horn Dam. They have refused to even consider studying removal of Cape Horn Dam. And this is a huge problem for us because if you don't have a baseline for the costs associated with removing Cape Horn Dam, you can't make a fair comparison to the costs of building a new fish ladder at Cape Horn Dam, which might not even get fish up and over the dam in the way that we've agreed we're going to do. So we have been trying for the last year to convince the folks in the Two Basin Partnership that they need to add a study plan for Cape Horn Dam removal. We tried in September to get them to agree to that. They flatly refused. And now FERC, as of March 13th, has issued a determination that says they're not even going to talk about Cape Horn Dam removal. Now, if that's where we are, then we're done. We need to move on to Plan B, which is FERC's surrender and decommissioning path. If the partners in the Two Basin Partnership will not even consider Cape Horn Dam removal, we need to find the other path and move on to that. We've been saying all along, the whole idea of this relicensing deal is that it would be faster and more certain than FERC's unbelievably slow and complicated processes. But if the relicensing is not going to squarely address this very serious problem of Cape Horn Dam, then we're not going to support it. And we need to move on to what appears to us to be the relatively more certain and much more expeditious process of FERC surrender and decommissioning.
One thing I want to mention here, a question that we get from people a lot is, well, why would it move to FERC's surrender and decommissioning process? Why wouldn't it go back to PG&E? And it's really important to remember here that PG&E has made it very clear they don't want this project. This project is a huge liability for them. It costs them, I think they've said, $30 for every dollar that of energy that they generate. So it's a money-losing project. They're right to be concerned about the reliability of the project and all the liabilities that are mounting over them. That's why it would not go back to PG&E.
Even if they wanted it, FERC has said, no, you pulled your relicensing application. You cannot relicense this project. PG&E can't relicense it. The only parties that have proposed to relicense it are the Two Basin Partnership. The alternative to that relicensing is surrender and decommissioning. And again, we are now very clear that if we go to surrender and decommissioning, Cape Horn Dam is going to come out. So we need a solution that provides Eel River Fisheries really effective passage. And we need that agreement now is really, I think, where we're at. And unfortunately, you know, the folks on the Russian River side seem to have decided that they can just stall on this.
Let me see if I can try to summarize here my understanding of all of this, because as we've said a number of times throughout today's episode, this is complicated. So the Two Basin Partnership is moving forward on a license, and they're moving forward on getting rid of Scott Dam, but they didn't really want to touch Cape Horn Dam, in part because, or perhaps largely because, the Russian River interests, the Sonoma Water Agency and the Mendocino County Inland Water and Power Commission, they want to keep that diversion into the Russian River. And what FERC's action and what Friends of the Eel River has pushed FERC to do, really, is that it is going to force a consideration of how fish can get past Cape Horn Dam in such a way that it doesn't pose a significant barrier to the fish so that they can have actual real recovery in the Eel River. So something's going to have to change. Either the Two Basin Partnership is going to have to add a significant repair or reconsideration of how to allow for volitional fish passage, or the Cape Horn Dam is going to have to come out. Is that right?
Here's the thing. Let's just back up on that summary. What we have done by forcing FERC to acknowledge that it has to consult on the fish ladder, we've lit the fuse on a process that is going to result in a jeopardy decision. The question that we don't know the answer to right now is how big that jeopardy decision is going to be. But it is absolutely certain that the National Marine Fisheries Service is going to say that the existing infrastructure risks extinction for Eel River fisheries. So it absolutely has to be fixed.
Will you remind our listeners, what do you mean by jeopardy?
Right. Jeopardy means basically that this action could lead to the extinction of the piece of the Endangered Species Act you're talking about, the population you're considering at that point. And as we noted, you know, NIMS already concluded that operation of the Potter Valley project as it ran through most of the 20th century was leading to jeopardy for Eel River, Chinook, and Steelhead. And that's why we got the flows changed. But now we've got to address this other problem of getting fish back into the top of the river to really get fish back and create a situation where the populations can rebuild and maintain themselves. And the opposite of that is the threat of extinction. And as we noted, you know, we're talking about a few hundred fish in these populations. Extinction is a real possibility at that level.
So at this point, in order to continue on this current relicensing path, we need to see some changes, possibly changes to the project description that would allow for studies of Cape Horn Dam and a study that includes evaluating options for removal. I think it's important to note, too, that we are not talking about removing Cape Horn Dam and thus turning off the diversion to the Russian River. In fact, there's some studies coming out, I think they're due this summer, that analyze different options for alternative diversion structures. So, you know, it's really, I just want to make sure that that's very clear, that again, we are coming back to those two core values, those two core goals that this whole two basin solution process started with, one of which is maintaining water supply. And that's something that we are still attempting to do while we work any angle we can to save our fisheries.
All right. So this is going to be something that we touch on again in a future show, I'm sure. And for more information, again, go to Alicia. What's the website?
It's a tricky one, folks. It's eelriver.org.
All right, there we go. All right. Thank you to Alicia and Scott for joining on the Eco News Report. Go to eelriver.org for more information and to sign up for their email list. And we'll be back on this time and channel next week for more environmental news from the North Coast of California.